11 SA 86, and 11 SA 124. And 11 SA 86, Vermillion is the opposer against Raftopoulos. And then 11 SA 124, Raftopoulos brothers are the opposers, and Vermillion is the respondents. That said, argument is set for 45 minutes per side on both cases, and the appellants will have to keep track of the time. Please identify yourself when you start your arguments, and we'll proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Laura Chartrand, appearing on behalf of Vermillion Ranch Limited Partnership. Seated at the table is my co-counsel, Jack Silver. We ask the court to reserve 15 minutes for rebuttal. By order of the court, the record in both appeals have been combined. In case number 11 SA 86, appellant Vermillion asked this court to reverse the judgment of the water court and find the following. First, the term "and all other beneficial purposes" does not encompass commercial and industrial purposes. Second, that the term "and all other beneficial purposes" does not attach to the senior 1893 water right. Third, that any uses related to "and all other beneficial purposes" other than irrigation, domestic, and stock water have been abandoned. And finally, that the conditional water rights for industrial and commercial purposes are speculative absent a specific plan in a quantifiable amount of water. In case 11 SA 124, appellee Vermillion asked this court to affirm the water court's judgment, finding first that Vermillion met the cannon well requirement, and second, Vermillion made reasonable diligence on its conditional water right. I will provide a concise statement of case 11 SA 86. In 1893, Raftopoulos's predecessor obtained a water right for irrigation purposes. In 1973, Raftopoulos's predecessor, Buckley, applied for an enlargement and alternate points of diversion for the water right that was first decreed in 1893. In 1974, the water court entered the decree. And in entering the decree, the water court provided the following uses: irrigation, domestic, stock water, and all other beneficial purposes. In 2009, Raftopoulos filed the application which is subject of this appeal. Raftopoulos applied for new surface water rights, new water storage rights, and a change of water right for alternate points of diversion and alternate place of storage. In issuing its decree concerning the 2009 application, the water court improperly concluded that the term "and all other beneficial purposes" included industrial and commercial uses, and that the term "and all other beneficial purposes" related back to the 1893 priority.
But was part of that 1893 priority still conditional? Are we talking about absolute water rights through this whole chain? I really couldn't figure it out from the briefs.
These are all absolute water rights.
All right, so they were absolute water rights applied to irrigation.
The 1893 right was applied to
irrigation. Okay, and then when the alternative point of diversion was sought, was there a quantification of the amount of acre feet that had been put to beneficial use?
The record does not support that there was a historic consumptive use of prior practices.
I'm trying to get my handle on your position and then your opponent's position about these industrial or business rights that are going to be used. They aren't part of the absolute irrigation right. Are they new appropriations with a new date? Using this idea that somehow there was an original decree for ancillary purposes?
Raftopoulos contends that the 1893 right was changed in 1974 to include the term "and other beneficial purposes." And
so part of the absolute right is going to go from irrigation to these additional purposes?
They say that the 1974 right changed the use, not only enlarged the right and added additional water to that water right, but it also, and also adding points of diversion. But Raftopoulos' position is that it changed, it related back to the 1893 right.
Okay, I guess we'll get an explanation for that. It just, it's hard to wrap around exactly what the water court decreed and how you can have additional uses for which there hasn't been any application of water yet, but I suppose that's your point here.
And in addition, the fact that after the change decree occurred, there were no other uses of that water until 2009 and 2010, that water was solely used for irrigation purposes. So not only does the underlying record support that change never related back to the 1893 right, the practice that Raftopoulos' predecessor and Raftopoulos themselves indicate that was a right only for irrigation purposes.
But you wouldn't have any trouble if this was a new appropriation date, right? And there was additional water there and there were uses that it could be put to.
Our trouble would be then speculation that the applicant didn't have a specific plan at the time the application took place to form an intent that it was going to use the water, whether it was the enlargement water or relating back.
But we're bound, are we not, by the trial court's findings of fact, if there's any evidence, and there are, what is this, possible oil and gas application, gravel application, what is it?
Both applications, for oil and gas purposes and dust suppression purposes.
Both of which would require water.
Both of which would require water.
Okay, and what do we do with the trial court's findings that there is evidence that there is a use out there to which this water can be put?
And what's at question is when that, not when that use took place, but how that use, when it took place, should be characterized. The use for commercial and industrial purposes didn't occur till 2009 and 2010. It's Vermilion's position that Raftopoulos was attempting to resurrect a long-abandoned right if, in fact, the water court properly concluded that and all other beneficial purposes should include industrial and commercial purposes.
Okay, so there's an annotation back to 1893 that marks the use of these rights in priority, or is it some other date? Is it a 73 date? Is it a 2009 date?
It's Raftopoulos didn't use this water for commercial and industrial purposes until 2009 and 2010. So Vermilion's position is that, first of all, the and other beneficial purposes term should not be read to include industrial and commercial purposes. Our second position is that and other beneficial purposes was never intended to relate back, that the 1973 change was solely for an enlargement of that ditch, an additional amount of water, as well as alternate points of diversion. There was never an indication in the underlying record to indicate that it intended to change a use. There was no historical use consumption evaluation as part of the process. And the trial court had the benefit of hearing directly from the applicant of the 1973 change case, who in his testimony testified that his intent for that change application was twofold. One was to share whatever water remained in the creek, so to enlarge that water right. And the second was to reflect alternate points of diversion for that water right.
Said that the trial judge said that the decree was unambiguous and yet went outside to look at other things to determine that. What specifically were you referring to?
In the water court decree, the water court describes the decree as plain, that its meaning is plain. And in reading the water court's order, we conclude that the water court first considered the underlying record. And the underlying record in this case was, again, the applications that were submitted to the water court, the actual decree, as well as the testimony of the applicant of that at that time. And in considering the underlying record, we feel the court ignored paragraph 5 of the application. Paragraph 5 of the application specifically states and asks the applicant to describe what the change of use is. Paragraph 5 in the application discusses solely the enlargement as well as the alternate points of diversion. There is no indication in the application that an intent to change the use of the 1893 priority existed.
Council, before you move on, then, and you're probably going to move to this, but your argument so far has been entirely in the negative. This cannot include these uses, but where did the language come from? I mean, can you help us understand that? I guess you're suggesting it couldn't have meant what it says, or do you have an alternative meaning for why that language went in there?
Certainly, Your Honor. We would reference the canon of construction. The inclusion of one thing implies the exclusion of the other.
And let me stop you there, because that doesn't take care of your catch-all at the end. I mean, that canon says this, this, and this, so nothing else can apply. The problem is you've got this, this, and everything else. So I just don't think works here. If you can help me give some that meaning to that catch-all phrase at the end, because it says everything else. So if you say it couldn't be anything, then I guess under your reading.
We certainly, our position is that it is simply a modifier to those terms, and that if the water court had intended to award other uses, it would have enumerated those other uses as it had done with irrigation, stop water, and domestic. Mm-hmm. The court did not list commercial and industrial purposes.
It says all other uses. What does that mean?
And that means any other uses that might be associated with irrigation, stock water, or domestic. But that clause simply modifies or enhances what one might perceive to be included in irrigation, stock water, and domestic.
So, well, that's a slightly different canon, meaning that you're listing things and the catch-all relates back to what was listed. That's the argument you're making.
Yes.
Okay. And can you give me some examples of what that might be?
I think that the add-on would be if irrigation were to include not only irrigation of hay or alfalfa, if you were to irrigate perhaps a lawn outside of a ranch home, that would be considered inclusive in the irrigation. That would be the example of and all other beneficial purposes.
Well, it already says it, irrigation, though, doesn't it?
It does, and I think that at the time, and when we look at the practice of the applicant and those who held the water rights thereafter, is that they apply that water simply for hay and alfalfa purposes, and that this was providing an opportunity perhaps to also include the irrigation of lawns and gardens outside the ranch.
And was there any evidence of that? I mean, is there anything more that you can give me that what actually happened? Yeah, you're speculating on that, correct?
On what actually happened?
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, was there testimony? Oh, I have a lawn that I want to water too. I mean,
there's nothing in the record to indicate what other uses and other beneficial purposes, how that might enhance irrigation, stock water, and domestic. There was nothing to indicate. What there is in the record is the applicant himself not being able to describe what and all other beneficial purposes meant. The applicant's testimony in the record says that the water commissioner approached him and said, hey, I think you should adjudicate whatever's remaining in this creek between you and your neighbor. And here's how we can go about and do it. The applicant never formed an intent in 1973 or 1974 to do anything with that water other than irrigation, stock water, and domestic.
I thought that they used the water for some industrial purposes, that they were taking it up to Moffat County for something or another.
And that occurred in 2009 or 2010. So that was the applicant's predecessor, Raftopoulos. And Raftopoulos decided to supply water to Moffat County because he had been approached by Moffat County to deliver that water.
But he's not taking that out of the ag water, huh?
He is taking it out of the attic.
Okay, so what's the injury with that? If it's the same water and it's consumptively identified, you certainly can change it to another use, right?
The concern, yes, and certainly if Mr. Raftopoulos wanted to change his water right to include an 100% consumptive use, which is what a commercial and industrial purpose is, versus the irrigation purpose, by virtue of him removing that water for that consumptive purpose, he's changing the regime on the stream. And Vermilion is the downstream water rights user and is very concerned about just that.
So you showed injury in the case? You have proof that the right is being enlarged and that'll injure your client?
At trial, we expressed our concern that the applicant was not quantifying the historic consumptive use of the commercial and industrial right, at which point the argument of Raftopoulos concerned the fact that the only bundle of sticks in their mind they were changing was the irrigation purpose, that they were moving that water to a different location, so they didn't have a need to quantify the commercial use.
Can I interrupt you there? And maybe this is starting to get to one of the points, and that is kind of in the back of my mind in all this is, why do we care what the purposes were in 1974? But do I hear you now saying, and maybe this has been inherent in everything you've been saying, that rather than seek a change to industrial purposes now at the time of this proceeding, because that would entail an enlargement of the right that Raftopoulos is saying all he's seeking a change to is the point of diversion, because he already had the right to use this for industrial purposes and he doesn't have to prove up a change now?
And that I believe is their position, is that they don't have to prove that up. And why it matters to our client is that it does injure, it does change the stream regime.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
For over 34 years, since the time the change, the enlargement and the change in the point of diversions occurred, there were no uses for industrial and commercial purposes. The applicant in 1973 did not express an intent to use it for commercial and industrial purposes. Raftopoulos used that water purposely and intentionally only for irrigation purposes, and didn't think about using that water right until it was approached by Moffitt County.
And so at some point, whether it's now or whether it was in 74, to acquire a change to use the water, not merely for irrigation, but also for industrial purposes, you're saying always entailed, at some point, whenever that came, it entailed an enlargement of the water right that existed before that. Is that right?
And that enlargement, our position occurred in 2009 and 2010, when Mr. Raftopoulos supplied that water for commercial and industrial purposes. It did not take place at the time of the change application because there was no historic consumptive analysis that would have protected downstream users at that time.
By the way, can I follow up just one second before we totally leave this point about what it means for all other beneficial purposes? So if all other beneficial purposes included something that would involve 100% consumption, is in effect your argument in a roundabout way that that could not have been the intent of the order in 1974 because it was never proven I don't know what that it was. There was no grant of an enlargement of the right, and that necessarily would entail an enlargement of a right that had been granted strictly for irrigation.
And certainly, the water court, from our position, wouldn't have done that without the proper consideration of how that right would have been enlarged, without having looked at how that change of use would have impacted the downstream users.
And in the original decree from back in the 1890s, What exactly were the purposes that was the water was decreed for back then?
For irrigation purposes.
Okay, and that was expressly all the grant was for.
And that was the sole grant for the 1893 rights.
Well, what's more important though is how the right was actually used over time, right? Because regardless of what the decree says, the quantification becomes the actual application of actual beneficial use, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor. And that was something that was not demonstrated at the time in 1974, nor was it demonstrated again in the application that's at issue today.
Excuse me. Director, what about the quote from Raftopoulos's brief about testimony essentially that it had been used for industrial purposes for over 30 years? I'm just quoting what I'm sure you've seen. What about that? That's evidence of use?
That is testimony that references use with absolutely no year assigned to it, no quantity assigned to it. We're not sure if Raftopoulos' position is that in support of its hunting business, it has used some of that water for an industrial or commercial purpose that's associated with the business. Mm-hmm. We would argue that the hunting business, any water that was used perhaps was for domestic purposes to support the visitors who were there for the hunting business, or for wildlife, the water that would have been consumed by the wildlife that they were there to hunt. Mm-hmm. But we saw that in the brief, and there's nothing in the record to support that water was continuously used for commercial and industrial purposes.
And do I understand right, though, that even if it were, that would be a new appropriation in effect for that additional amount of water at whatever time it started being used? It wouldn't be it later in a change decree couldn't relate back to the time of the original decree if that water were not being used and hadn't been decreed at that time. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. And without that decree, Raftopoulos should not receive the protection of a priority for those purposes.
So in 1974, if that's the next time, and maybe there are things in between, I don't know, a change decree wouldn't have worked to change, to enlarge the right, but rather it would have had to be a separate appropriative right in itself.
Yes, Your Honor, and that would have been an option for the applicant in 1974. That would have been an option for Raftopoulos from when it started to control that water in 1985. But even if the court were to surmise that and all other beneficial purposes were to include industrial and commercial purposes, these uses, And we want to be clear, not the water right itself, but just the use commercial and industrial purposes has been abandoned. Non-use for an unreasonable period results in a presumption of intent to abandon. And by statute, that period of time is 10 years. The burden of proof then shifts to the owner of that water right, who must then come forward with evidence excusing the non-use. Here, the water court provided two excuses to Raftopoulos, and the record does not support the water court's position regarding those two excuses. First, the water court excused over 34 years of non-use, and I think that's an important distinction, is that the water court didn't conclude that water had been used for an industrial and commercial purpose. Instead, the water court inserted two excuses. The first one was that for over 34 years, the non-use for any industrial and commercial purposes cited to unfavorable market conditions, that Raftopoulos was unable to apply that water because of that purpose. However, and the record have been combined in all the cases, Vermilion established that it had a long history of selling water for oil and gas purposes in the 1970s, in the 1990s, and the 2000s. So Vermilion is uncertain where the water court determined, because there was no evidence provided, that market conditions would have hampered Raftopoulos from applying that water to commercial and industrial purposes. The second excuse that the water court provided to Raftopoulos for the non-use was the informal verbal agreement that the two parties had. Vermillion and Raftopoulos entered into a verbal agreement in where Vermillion would apply Raftopoulos' water to Raftopoulos' lands. And in exchange for irrigating Raftopoulos' lands, Vermillion would receive the opportunity to purchase hay that was produced as a result of that irrigation, minus its expenses. The water court took that fact and then applied it as a reason for why then Raftopoulos couldn't use that water for commercial and industrial purposes. Vermillion would point out, though, that Raftopoulos, first of all, had the intent to enter into that informal agreement to solely use his water for irrigation purposes. And that verbal agreement, it seems to be a very unpersuasive reason for why it couldn't use its water for commercial and industrial purposes. Vermillion was free to control and modify that contract at any point in time, and actually did so in 2008. So our position is that the water court inserted two excuses to not have to find an abandonment, and the law supports that acceptable justifications for extremely long periods of non-use are very limited. And these two excuses provided by the water court are just that, provided by the water court. Lastly, Vermillion challenges the water court's determination that Raftopoulos met the anti-speculation doctrine in awarding the use commercial and industrial purposes for its storage right.
Now, are these conditional storage rights?
And these are conditional storage rights.
Right.
So I'm moving from the discussion of the surface rights to the storage rights. For these uses, Raftopoulos failed to provide a specific plan, failed to provide firm contractual commitments, and failed to quantify the amount of water that was needed, and demonstrated that existing absolute water rights that he currently holds, that those water rights are insufficient to meet the applicant's needs. A conditional water right cannot be decreed in the absence of a specific plan and intent to put the appropriate waters to a beneficial use, including a demonstration of its need for the additional water in excess of its existing decrees for that purpose. Speculation is not a recognized beneficial use. And if an applicant intends to transfer the water, which it cannot personally use, it must present proof of firm contractual commitments to those whom the water will be supplied.
But the facts are that Raftopoulos has oil and gas claims, rights, leases. Isn't there some proof in the record that the water court relied upon that included that they had a property ownership to which they could apply this water, or a property interest?
Yes, Your Honor. The record shows that Raftopoulos owns mineral rights.
Yeah.
And that's where the record ends. There's no specific plan as to when those mineral rights were going to be developed, or even if they were likely to be developed. There was no specific quantification because there was no plan. Without a plan, there was no estimation of how much water would be needed to support that oil and gas development. So we think that that's incomplete and doesn't meet the expectation that the court needs to look at and making sure that it's not a speculative use. Raftopoulos also offered two contracts, the Moffat County contract that we have been discussing, and that the Moffat County contract doesn't include any quantities, doesn't include how much water is necessary for dust suppression. And the Moffat County contract also indicates that water can be supplied from two different sources. the Talamantes Creek, which is at issue in this case, and the Vermilion Ditch. So there's some options there, and again, we have no clear understanding of how much water is necessary to satisfy that contract. And that contract wasn't entered into until some 13 months after the application was filed.
So before the decree?
Before the decree, so it was 13 months after the application was filed. So at the time the application and that intent to use the water for commercial and industrial purposes, that contract did not exist. Rathopolis then goes on to try to rely upon its contract with Precision Excavation. And this contract, alleged contract, because it was never entered into evidence, was entered into, according to Rathopolis, a month before trial, some 29 months after the application was filed. So certainly our position is that the court cannot rely upon those two contracts to support the commercial and industrial purposes. And with the court's permission, I would like to reserve 15 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Grosskopf?
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Scott Grosskopf. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Balcom & Green in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, here representing Rathopolis Brothers. With me today is Mr. John Rathopolis, a partner in Rathopolis Brothers, and his son, George. There's two cases that are here before you on appeal, and there are very few similarities between these two appeals. What we have are two ranching families, both owning properties on Talamantes Creek in northwestern Colorado, both wanting water storage rights. After that, the similarities in these two cases end. What I'd like to do is provide a little background first of the procedure and what led up to these two cases, and then I'm going to do the cases sort of in reverse order, taking the Rathopolis appeal of Vermilion's conditional water rights and then do the Vermilion's appeal of Rathopolis's case. First, procedurally, it's important to note that these cases were not consolidated for trial. There were separate trials in these two matters.
We have neighbors here who are speaking for the entire flow of the creek, basically.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So this is a real-world situation about who has what priority and what use to a limited amount of water.
That's right, and I think that's why the water judge, who then sitting, understood that this was the dynamic and then decided to take judicial notice of all the evidence that was submitted in both of
them. We got one water source that we're talking about.
That's right, one creek.
Okay.
Rathopolis Brothers own property upstream, and Vermilion owns the property downstream, and Vermilion holds the senior water right in the Presta Pitts Ditch. It has used this water right to call out diversions from Rathopolis and can sweep the stream, taking all of the water in Talamantes Creek, leaving the upstream user without any source of supply for any water. Separate decrees were entered in these two cases after trial in June and September in 2010. The water judge first granted Rathopolis' decree and then denied Vermilion their decrees. But then in March of 2011, reversed that decision and granted Vermilion's water applications. So there's two appeals. There's the decree granting diligence and conditional water rights to Vermilion, and then second, the decree that changed the water rights and granted new conditional water rights for Rathopolis. Both of these two cases have different legal standards of review based upon the evidence and the legal issues that are presented. So first, the two decrees that were granted to Vermilion. These are for two water storage rights that could be stored at up to four alternate points of storage for a total of 2,400 acre feet. The evidence that was offered in the case was from the ranch, or from a partner in Vermilion Ranch, as well as an expert who only testified to the limited issue of water availability for one of the reservoir, two of the reservoir locations. There's three issues that we've brought to you for this appeal. The first concerns the legal standard that the water judge applied in these applications when he decided to grant them. The second is the evidence to support a finding of Ken and Will. Ken and Will, the applicants, developed these reservoirs within a reasonable time. And third, diligence on the conditional water right, whether or not they'd been reasonably diligent in developing this 35-year-old conditional water storage right. These three issues are unique to Vermilion's applications and were not raised in the appeal for Raftopoulos's decrees. So first, the legal standard. The court in the first decree denying these applications found that applicant has failed to prove by preponderance of the evidence that there's a substantial probability that it can and will complete these appropriations with diligence within a reasonable time. But then it later found in reversing itself on a motion for post-trial relief that only if the impediments make it impossible for the applicant to construct diversions does the court have any basis to deny an application under the Ken and Will requirement. In this instance, the court shifted the burden from the applicant to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that it can and will complete onto the opposer to prove that it was impossible to construct. This, we suggest, is completely inconsistent with the case law of this court.
Grosskopf, can you, looking at that paragraph, how did you get to shift? Certainly can stand standard. So how do you get just the burden?
Well, it requires proof of a negative, Your Honor, that it must be proven that it's impossible. Otherwise, the court says, if it's not impossible, then I must grant the application. And so in that instance, it's the applicant can come to court and say, well, I've got this wonderful water storage right, and I really, really want it. The court then, under that instance, if unless there's any demonstration of proof of impossibility that it can and will be constructed, then the application must be granted. And the water court, you can tell, he struggles with this. In the last paragraph of that order, when he, looking and comparing the evidence that was presented in both the Raftopoulos case and in the Vermilion case, and there he says, initially the court applied the same standard to both cases, but the evidence produced a different result. And he does also look at what the actual evidence that Vermilion did present in this case. It's that here, the evidence is that the applicant has a substantial ranching operation in northwestern Colorado and Wyoming. The operation involves at least 480 acres of its land. Essentially, that they have land, therefore they can build a reservoir. That's essentially the conclusion that the water judge makes. But whether it shifts the burden or whether it is just a different standard that's applied, we suggest that it still is inconsistent with the case law that requires a substantial probability of completion. It's an established test that requires a balancing of what is known and what is unknown. So what is unknown, or what do we know? Well, the evidence in this case does not support a finding of the Ken and Will. There's conflicting evidence over the amount of water that's available for these appropriations. The applicant's expert only testified that there was 1,000 acre feet of storage, water available for storage in Talamantes Creek. Yet they're claiming a reservoir for 2,400 acre feet. So there's not enough water under their own facts to support this, both of these appropriations. There is no evidence that they presented that they could afford or build these reservoirs, what they would cost. There's no evidence in the record about the ability to permit these reservoirs. There was no evidence regarding any wetlands studies, any looking at what the actual footprint of these reservoirs would be. And the footprint's rather important because, as the water judge noted in the first denial of these applications, that one of the reservoirs, in fact two, would inundate lands held by Raftopolis. These are lands that are irrigated by Raftopolis, water rights that would be inundated, and that are used by Raftopolis for their cattle ranching operation. There was no evidence of what these costs of condemnation would be and how that would impact the ability to construct these reservoirs. The only evidence of any sort of feasibility that was submitted in these cases came from the Raftopolis expert, who cited to a study that had been done at one of the four locations, which found that the soils were susceptible to liquefaction and severe deformation. In other words, that you couldn't build the reservoir on this site unless you removed all of these soils, thousands of square feet, cubic yards, I don't know what it was, but a large amount of land needed to be excavated. Otherwise, the reservoir would fail, would seep, would leak, leading to catastrophic failure.
Is that the...
That it is, Your Honor.
That was... testified to by your expert?
That's correct.
Can I get a clarification? Of course, we'll hear from the other side, too, but could the additional storage... is it going to be used for other water rights that are already made absolute? I mean, you said there was only a finding that a certain amount of water, what was it, 1,200 acre feet, unappropriate water was available. Is the storage space needed to put in water that's being changed to storage from present irrigation rights?
No, my understanding of the application is that this is for a new conditional water right that would take the 1,000 acre feet of unappropriated water that their expert found was available and store that.
So basically you're asking us, based on the proof, to cancel part of the storage right, not all of it, right?
Based on the evidence that they presented as to water availability, they shouldn't be allowed.
Sure, they can't appropriate more unappropriated water than is available.
Than is available,
right.
Yes.
Okay.
So at a minimum, the reservoir needs to be limited to 1,000 acre feet, or one or the other, but they can't have both. But that's not the sole factor to be considered here. There are a number of factors that we need to look at, and the evidence itself that was presented doesn't support the entirety of the balancing of all of the factors, what is known and what is not known, for these reservoirs to support a finding that they can and will build the reservoir. And I suggest that this Ingberg-Miller report is one of those known contingencies where Vermilion did not demonstrate how they could overcome this. This is very similar to the Aurora v. ACJ partnership, authored by Justice Bender, where there was government denial of access to build the reservoir. This court held known contingency, denial, must deny the appropriation. Similarly,
I don't see where in your position that it's... that they can't get the land access rights. I mean, those don't all have to be identified up front.
No, they don't have to be identified up front, but there has to be some sort of plan as to how they're going to come and acquire that. There has to be some sort of understanding of what the cost of that construction will be, how much they can, what it's going to take to go ahead and do that. Some evidence in the record to support that there is this known contingency that we have to condemn land, highly valuable land to the Raftopolis operation, that we're going to have to dig up all these soils and haul them away and put them somewhere, and we have to know how much that's going to cost.
And it sounds like all kinds of detail that you have to do to actually move the conditional appropriation to applying it. And it seems to me you want an upfront total plan here that the trial court adjudicates, and isn't that contrary to the idea that if the water is available, it's unappropriated, and you have a plan to put it to beneficial use, and you can put it to beneficial use, you don't have to show all the details that you're then going to have to pursue. You don't have to hire all the soil scientists and do all of this stuff up front, do you? You just get a placeholder in the line of appropriation, and then you go through the diligence periods. Isn't that how it works?
That is, I agree that you don't have to have all of the I's dotted and T's crossed, but there has to be some plan. There has to be a beginning from which we understand what the reservoir footprint is going to look like. There has to be some beginning understanding of what is going to happen, where the water will go, how much is going to be stored. Can the site actually do this? Can we put a ditch into the rock? Can we build the dam here? We have to have at least some beginning understanding, some testimony. Here there is absolutely none. There is no testimony, no expert testimony to describe any of these things. I suggest, Your Honor, that at least a beginning understanding of what is to occur needs to be in the record in order for the court to find that they can and will build the reservoir.
So, counsel, just so I am understanding your articulation of the standard here, you're not suggesting that just because you've tossed out or identified a particular contingency that alone, the identification of such contingency, nullifies the canon will test here, but rather, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying the burden always remains with the applicant to show the canon will. And here, in this case, having presented a contingency, the applicants here did not offer any sort of response to that to overcome that contingency, but it's more tethered to their overall burden to show canon will. Am I understanding you correctly?
That's precisely it, Your Honor. And that's exactly what the water court found when it first denied the application. So that was the factual finding that the court said. When it weighed these evidence and when it weighed the record, it said they had not met their burden of proof. Next, I'd like to just briefly touch on the questions of diligence in this case. There was no findings by the water court that Vermilion had been reasonably diligent in the development of this 35-year-old conditional water right. When it reversed itself, it made no additional findings on reasonable diligence. But the evidence here in this case also, again, is lacking. We have three things that we can point to in the furtherance of this. They applied for new water rights. And this is from the testimony of the manager, that what they did during this period was to apply for new water rights. So those are not related at all to the reservoir storage right. They applied for a grant to the CWCB 3 months before the deadline to file the application occurred. And they commissioned conceptual drawings for one of the four locations. And that also occurred, I believe, in the month preceding the filing of the application. So for at least 5.5 years or more, there was no activity that was pursued in the development of these water rights. And we suggest that, as a matter of law, the activities that were pursued are not sufficient. Absent some additional evidence and why they were unable to pursue this at the time, that it should be sufficient in itself to deny the reasonable diligence on this water right. We cited to the City and County of Denver, the Northern Colorado Conservancy District in our briefs. There, that case concerned a 20-year-old Denver applied for a water right that they claimed 20 years for that, where there hadn't been any activity, and the only activity they had done for that 20-year period was to apply for federal funding to begin the study of that reservoir. That's no different than what has occurred in this instance. Therefore, unless there's no questions on our Raftopolis appeal of Vermilion, we request that Vermilion's decrees be denied for failing to prove that there's a substantial probability that they can and will complete the appropriations.
Now, tell me again, is this on a diligence, or is this on a new appropriation, or is it a combination of both here?
Well, it's a combination of both. There's two water rights, but they're for four alternate places of storage, and they're all the same alternate places of storage. So essentially, they didn't prove that they can and will, which is a requirement of diligence proceedings. They did not prove that they can and will complete these reservoirs. at all, either in the new appropriation case or for the application for finding of reasonable diligence. So on to the appeal of the Raftopoulos decree. This is a limited appeal. Vermilion has chosen to limit its appeal to three issues. This case did grant changes of water rights. It granted new conditional storage rights and a change of conditional storage rights. They're limiting their appeal to the court's interpretation of a decree, the 1974 change decrees, that changed the roof number one and the Yarnell number one ditch water rights. They're also limiting it to their appeal to the question of, well, if it did change those uses, then those uses have subsequently been abandoned. And third, it's a finding of need for the commercial and industrial or uses for the new conditional water rights. They're not arguing that the conditional irrigation rights should be abandoned, nor are they arguing that that the water court was incorrect when it changed the irrigation rights to change it to add additional alternate points of diversion.
Was there a consumptive quantification at that time that changed
it? There was an analysis of the historical use of these water rights on the acreage. There was not a specific acre-foot quantification on use, but it was quantified as to acreage, as to the historical acreage. There's limitations on the decree that provide that the applicant can only use these water rights to irrigate a total of, I believe it's 88 acres. I could be wrong, I'll have to check, but it did limit the total irrigated acreage that could be done with these water rights. And again, the applicant in this case only requested to change the irrigation uses, to move the irrigation of these roof and Yarnell water rights upstream to new points of diversion.
But to stay in irrigation?
Only change the irrigation use. So at the new points of diversion, only irrigation would occur.
So how do we get these industrial uses? Is that solely in a conditional side of the equation?
Well, I guess what we need to do is sort of look at what these prior decrees said. To answer that question, I think it goes back to your earlier questions that you had in the discussion with Mr. Archer. What we're looking at is what these 1974 decrees did.
Just to start at the beginning here, I'll let you get on there because that's right where we want to go. But why, could you just sort of explain why in the context of your applications are we concerned with what these 1974 decrees did? Is somebody saying you're exceeding what you were allowed under 1974? Is the engineer stopping you from doing something? Why are we concerned with whether in 1974 the change, that decree allowed industrial uses?
And I think that's a very good question and one that we struggled with at the trial. I mean, it was our position that we were not touching. There was only one of the bundles. One of the sticks in the bundle that we were changing the irrigation right, and that was the concern, is how it had been used for irrigation since the time. The division engineer has not argued, she testified, but there was no, they're not here, they weren't involved in trial as to whether or not there'd been, an enlargement of the water rights since 1974 or earlier. It's only now here on the appeal, I think, that we're getting some argument for the first time as to that industrial use that was the other beneficial purposes, the commercial industrial use, is in fact an enlargement of those 1974 decrees. We're getting that now for the first time here.
I apologize for interrupting. Please answer Justice Hobbs's question. I'm sorry.
It was an issue at trial as to what uses could be made by these water rights. And the water judge found that it was beneficial to make a determination as to what other uses could be made of these. And And so that's how it's now, I guess, before you here as well, as part of the decree that was entered, that the water judge did make specific findings that's what those 1974 decrees did, and that's how they've been administered by the division engineer, that's how they may be used into the future. So when we look at these early decrees, the standard that we look at is, what facts gave it birth? You know, how did these water rights come into fruition, and what was this change case? And we consider the application, statements made, and then if it's ambiguous at that point, you can look to the division engineer's interpretation of those prior change decrees. So first, it's correct that we did have the testimony of Mr. R.C. Buckley, who was the person who signed the original applications, and he was there to testify. To the best of his recollection, this did occur some 35 or more years ago. And he was asked by Vermilion's counsel whether he had intended to make other uses of the water. And he said, I did. That you might be able to sell excess water that was there, or that you had a right for construction use, other uses that might be available. So he was asked, and he testified that yes, he had an intent to use these senior irrigation rights in the roof number one and Yarnell number one for other purposes.
The same block of consumptive use water, or is this the excess type of water we talked about in Burlington, where it actually comes out of somebody else's hide?
Well,
in other words, excess being water you didn't use, but you might want to use.
Well, there is no record in the 1974 change decrees that quantified the historical use of that water. We acknowledge that they're under the FRICO, the Golden cases in that line, that they are limited to what, you know, the historical use of those cases, even if there was not a quantification at the time. But that continues, that implied limitation continues.
Are there protective conditions in this decree that say that?
Well, again, in the, which decree are you referring to?
Well, I'm talking about the decree that allows these industrial uses that haven't been made yet.
There were no protective conditions in that decree. It's change of water right to include other additional uses.
So are you asking that we return it for a protective condition that it doesn't exceed the amount of historical consumptive use used for irrigation?
Well, I think the answer there is that that was not argued by Vermilion. That additional terms and conditions needed to be applied to that particular water right, that the water court made specific factual findings, in this case, that the changes of water right would not cause any injury, and made findings at the same time that the uses, the additional uses of commercial and industrial were included in the gambit of uses, and that Vermilion had not demonstrated any injury, and suggests that those factual findings have some deference to the, you know, this court should provide some deference to the water court as to those factual findings and those terms and conditions that were applied, especially when they haven't been raised in appeal to this court. So again,
I was just sort of playing over in my head what you just said, and I didn't quite get it. So could you just say that again, your response to that, what you think we should do with that issue?
Well, as I understood Justice Hobbs' question, is whether there needs to be additional terms and conditions and
imposed. Yeah.
And the response we have is, the water court found that there was no injury as a result of the change requested here. Vermilion did not present any evidence of any injury to their water rights as a result of the change that was granted in this case. The water judge also found that the commercial and industrial uses were one component of the all other beneficial uses, and that in fact in 1974 they had been changed to include those other uses. Those findings, we suggest, deserve deference from this court. They were factual findings that this court gives deference if there's testimony in the record to support those findings. And the water court did fashion terms and conditions that it found appropriate, to protect other water rights in this.
And you're entitled to have the water right if there are protective conditions included, right?
Well, I was going to say, but the only protection is quantitative, right?
In this decree, there was a, yes, and a quantitative on the number of acres that could be used.
Not how, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Not how it could be used.
That's okay. Correct.
Okay.
So the bottom line is whether the quantification of the historically used consumptive use is what's going to be used for the industrial use, and there would have to be some kind of dry up to make sure that the enlargement didn't occur, right? Justice Rice's golden cases and so on. So,
right.
So your assumption, and you're telling us that the consumptive use will not be enlarged, right? Over the historic application to irrigation and these other uses.
That's what the water court found, yes.
Okay. So then the question becomes whether those conditions are actually in the decree to be administered by the state engineer.
And in as to in the decree, you know, limiting the number of acres and requiring the applicant to notify the division engineer of acres to be irrigated, and each year as to how much they're going to be.
So what's the plan for dry up or fallowing so there isn't an enlarged use when you go and put it to the other uses? What is that plan?
I don't believe there's a plan that is identified in the record of this case specific to that. Practically what I could surmise is if there's an issue of, well, I think I should also say, let me think. So I think your question is, if what is the plan if the water right is going to be put to other uses other than irrigation, what types of things need to be done?
Yeah, on the ranch to cut back on the application of water.
And I, at this point, I don't think there's anything in the record that suggests what that plan is. There is the requirement that they notify the division engineer the acres to be irrigated and where they're going to be. This is a water right that is, again, junior to Vermilion's senior irrigation right. So if Vermilion is getting shorted, they place the call. There's absolutely no uses of this water right that can be made by Raftopolis. So the idea of an enlarged use is also somewhat neutered in this instance because if they're not getting their water, Raftopolis doesn't get any.
It's neutered with respect to people who are senior, but not necessarily someone who's junior, right? And of course, that's not in front of us. But
that's right.
So your position is that even if there might be a change of use, you think it's authorized and, more important, it's controlled or prescribed or limited by the historic consumptive use. Is that right, or is that an oversimplification?
No, I think that's a fair surmise that, yes, I mean, that's what the law says, is that you're limited to the historical use. There was no quantification in those 1974 change decrees, but nonetheless, following the cases of Justice Rice, that's where they are.
Can I ask one question to follow up on that, but more with regard to construction of the terms of the decree themselves, this all other beneficial purposes? So should we take into account then in deciding what was meant by that phrase that it would have been unjustified in terms of the amount of water involved for the water court to grant, to intend and grant a change to industrial purposes without also limiting the amount that could be used in those industrial purposes to the duty of water on the irrigation?
Well, I think the law here is that, you know, a decision of the water court entered within the jurisdiction of the water court, even if wrong, is not subject to a collateral attack. And if the water court should have done something in 1974, that maybe would have put those additional conditions. And that's now we have a collateral attack on that 1974 decree.
Well, in a sense, but is it different from a collateral attack if what's at issue here is construing what the court said in that order? Not was it right or wrong in doing it, but rather in construing what it meant by those terms. And it seems to me there's just a little touch about what you're asking us to do that suggests we should construe those terms to that the judge intended to do something which we agree the record would not have supported.
But I think the judge is also limited by the law, as it is. And the law has always been that you're limited by the implied volumetric limits, or you're limited by the historical use and what was intended in that use. And so the 1893 decrees, as changed, continue to be limited by that use. Now, Vermilion has not sought to change or impose new limitations on that use in this appeal or even at trial. And that, we suggest, was not even before the water judge, because...
But this comes up in a new application. I mean, what's before us now? What application, so we don't lose sight of the ball here?
What we have before you is an application to change the irrigation use of these water rights to new points of diversion.
For irrigation?
For irrigation.
Okay.
Where it was quantified for irrigation uses.
That's all that's before us.
And if I may just quickly touch again on what the interpretation of those decrees, and if this court were to find that, you know, somehow there's an ambiguity in these 1974 change decrees, then the next step is to look at what the division engineer said. And here there was testimony by the division engineer that they had in fact tabulated these water rights as having been changed. This is the contemporaneous interpretation of the division engineer. That was entered, began at the time of these tabulations occurred, and has continued on through additional division engineers to present day. So they have been tabulated as such. That's the evidence that's in the record. There's no other questions on the change. I'd like to move on to the other issues that Vermilion raises. First, to the abandonment question. Now, Vermilion argues that since 1970, if these water rights were changed in 1970, and let me just step back one moment. The question of all other beneficial uses is limited to whether or not the senior water right, not the new enlargement right that everyone agrees was granted in 1974, but it's whether the other beneficial uses also attaches onto the senior water right. And it's also interesting, Vermilion does not argue, and there's no dispute, that in 1974, the senior water right was changed to alternate places of storage. And there's no dispute that in 1974, that decree also added on to the senior water right domestic and stock water uses. So the senior water right can divert at multiple places of diversion, and it can be used for stock water and domestic purposes. And there was, so they've made that acknowledgement as well. Now onto the abandonment question. This is, again, a factual finding not to be disturbed on appeal unless the evidence is wholly insufficient to support the water court's decision. Vermilion only appeals the question of whether the additional other beneficial uses have been abandoned. As was referenced, there was an agreement between 1985 to 2008, which was effectively some sort of a lease arrangement whereby Vermilion irrigated Raftopoulos's lands, and then they cut the hay, and they got to buy the hay at a reduced rate, minus their expenses in doing so. So they got the hay. Raftopoulos, at the time, the testimony shows, he was buying hay from somebody else. They didn't need it. The ranching operations was growing, and so this seemed like a good working relationship between the families. There's also the evidence that Vermilion at this time more or less managed the Raftopoulos Ranch for them. The water commissioner, the evidence in the record that we've cited that Justice Bender pointed out, was from the division engineer. The water rights had been used for industrial purposes. Like an oil and gas company would use the water to haul and use for dust suppression and what have you. There's also the evidence in the record that since 2008, Raftopoulos had been actively pursuing these uses and trying to develop and engage other industrial uses.
But isn't that kind of late for abandonment purposes? I asked that same question of opposing counsel, and it just seems like it's very late in the history of all of this.
Well, but again, it sort of I think it ties nicely into the historical use question.
Could you explain that to
me? Well, if it's being used for irrigation, it can't be used for industrial purposes. And during that time, Vermilion was acting, as the water court found, acting as an agent. I don't know if that's quite the appropriate finding, but that Vermilion was doing this work for Raftopoulos and using it. Raftopoulos was doing other things. That, you know, the fact that there may have been a long period of non-use for a particular purpose shouldn't necessarily
mean so your point basically is trying to cut through this now, that this is a collateral attack on the 70s decree. The only thing really before us is the change for irrigation purposes. So really there's no record, there's no injury. Is there any even need to us to reinterpret or look at that 74 decree? How does this come up? How are they allowed to bring this? And I mean, don't they have to show an enlargement or some sort of prima facie evidence of enlargement? I mean, you're basically saying we haven't used it for these industrial purposes yet. They were changed in effect or reaffirmed, whatever that other language meant. And until and if we enlarge the water right, which, you know, there can be an injunction against an enlargement, I guess, at that time, there's no reason to look into the issues of this 70s decree. Is that basically your position?
Sounds like a good position.
Well, all we're trying to do is conceptualize what you two parties are asking for, and I'll tell you what, it's not real clear. You know, who's doing what, where, to when? We know to whom, it's each other, right? But we're not quite sure that in the posture of this application to change irrigation rights, that we even need to address all these other issues.
And I think, you know, we suggest that you don't need to address these other issues, that there are other avenues. I mean, the reality is that the water court did make particular findings on these questions that are now before you on appeal, and made findings as to what those uses were. Made findings that they weren't abandoned. Those were the issues that Vermilion did raise. They didn't present any evidence to say that there was an enlarged use. There was no evidence. I mean, there perhaps was testimony from the Vermilion side that these water rights hadn't been used for industrial uses and commercial uses, but there was also testimony from the division engineer to say that they had. The water court balanced the evidence, made findings of no abandonment.
Counsel, before you move on, let me just ask you to directly respond to your opponent's argument, which I think is, I mean, she may say this when she gets back up here, but that they didn't really have to show an enlargement because just by the nature of changing from agriculture to commercial industrial, there had to be an enlargement. You would have to have a 100% consumptive use in that situation.
But that occurs, water rights have changed all the time. You know, they're changed from agricultural to municipal uses. They're changed from agricultural to industrial uses. So it's not a de facto enlargement of the water right. Enlargement in the context of enlarged use. They're still limited by the historical consumptive use of the water.
Right, which you can see that that's an implied term. I mean, all the way along in the history of this use of this right, that's been an implied term.
That's correct. Finally, the question of speculation that they've raised, if I time's running here, those findings we suggest are the water court itself found that there's no credible evidence presented in these cases, being the Raftopoulos and the Vermilion applications, suggesting that the amount of water applied for would not be needed within a reasonable time. No one can seriously contest the need for this water. He made specific factual findings on both Vermilion's case and the Raftopoulos case that these water rights and the claims were not speculative. I suggest that these are factual findings that are also, again, given deference by this water court. The two applications, there is some differences, however. You know, if you want to look at the evidence that was presented in these two cases, it is slightly different. Raftopoulos had applied for a one reservoir right. It's a multi-purpose reservoir, both industrial, commercial, and irrigation, in large part to be used for irrigation. Vermilion reservoir nearly twice the size would be half of it for industrial, 1,200 acre feet, and then half of it for irrigation. There was no evidence presented that by Vermilion that Raftopolis didn't in fact need this water. Evidence is that Vermilion has a senior water right that it can call out.
Can I interrupt just 1 second in your couple of minutes? There seems to be a little irony here in having these two cases back to back, because on the one hand, you're arguing it was not your obligation, it was theirs with regard to their decree to show a substantial probability that they can and will put this water to beneficial use. In your case, it seems to be just the flip. So you're saying, but we did make that showing because they didn't present any evidence to show we couldn't use.
No, I guess I'm not intending to shift the burden in that context. It's Raftopolis presented evidence that this water right was needed and demanded. There's a need and demand for the water. The burden then shifts to the opposer to prove, no, you don't. You don't need it. That they didn't do.
So basically, you're saying on the one hand, they failed to meet the balancing test with regard to their decree, but you did meet the balancing test with regard to your decree.
That, well, on the can and will requirement, yes. I believe the anti-speculation is a little different on the can and will. It's I don't know, sort of a tangent off of it. It's in addition to, or however you want to approach it. But, you know, can and will you build a reservoir? Well, we proved we could. They haven't appealed that question. We say they didn't prove it. We've appealed on the can and will. Speculation, they've appealed whether we're speculative. We haven't done it as a direct appeal on that issue.
That means they're conditional storage rights.
That's right.
Yeah.
Conditional water storage rights. And so
they're not change of existing rights into storage.
That's right. These are just storage. Run the mill, block the river off, and store the water. And so, you know, I guess in my 20 seconds remaining, we suggest that there was evidence here to support the finding of can and will, evidence to support a need and demand that the water rights would be used on the Raftopolis. And so what we, I guess, request is that this court affirm the decree granting Raftopolis' change of water rights and new conditional water rights, and deny Vermilion's. Thank you very much for your time.
Hello, Ms. Chartrand.
The first question I'd like to address, Justice Hobbs presented, why should you address the issue of the water court determining that the 1974 enlargement and change of point of diversion case related back to 1893? And frankly, the water court gifted Raftopolis in its water decree. It gave to Raftopolis something more than it had. Mm-hmm. And in Vermilion's only recourse is to come before you to say the water court got it wrong. If we are to suggest that change cases don't need to demonstrate a historic consumptive use, that an applicant doesn't have to provide a specific plan for use, that an applicant need not articulate specifically how that use
but would you concede that the application is only to change for irrigation to alternate points of diversion? That's what was represented to us, that they didn't intend to do anything more in this application that's before us than to do that.
And their application I would concede that their change application specifically was for irrigation purposes.
So how do all these issues get injected, and why do we even have to look at them?
Because when you open your water right up to a change case, you open that entire water right under examination. And these are, you know, questions of whether that is going to be enlarged or not. In this particular change case involves the use of pipelines and sprinkler systems. So Raftopolis is adjusting how it's irrigating its land. our position, our expert's position, is that there's an efficiency that's gained from that change of irrigation practices that then opens the door.
That's probably undoubtedly accurate, what you're saying, is a matter of principle, but isn't that something that should be dealt with in the trial court as a factual finding and contested?
Yes, Your Honor, and we provided testimony from our expert. We had and Raftopoulos had their expert talk just about that efficiency.
Not about the enlargement I'm talking about, the enlargement of the water right, as because of the lack of consumptive use.
In the enlargement of the water right, I think the challenge was that water right wasn't used for that purpose or wasn't enlarged until 2008 or 2009 or 2010. It's hard to gather without knowing the quantity of water that's actually used and what kind of impact that will have on Mr. Raftopoulos. Our concern is that the water court said in its decree, in its 2010 decree, that Raftopoulos, you can relate back all the other beneficial purposes to the 1893 right. And that will certainly result at some point in injury, depending on how Raftopoulos uses that water right to Vermilion. Raftopoulos asserts that Vermilion controls the creek, and that when it calls its senior agricultural right, that means Raftopoulos has no more water. And the record would support otherwise.
Well, this is pretty interesting because all of this is done in retrospect, right? But we've dealt recently with declaratory judgments between contesting parties about what a prior decree allowed or did not allow. Here we have an application simply for a change in the point of diversion for the historic irrigation use. And it seems to me that you've asked for, in effect, a declaratory judgment without calling it that. A declaratory judgment in regard to the 70s decree and what it allows. And it just doesn't seem like procedurally it's lined up right. And the burden of proof, is not clear about who has to do what, because the procedure is this free-for-all injection into a mere change of agricultural diversion, alternative point of diversion. It's re-looking at this 70s decree, and I'm getting real concerned now about whether the procedural posture here is correct, and whether these are just gratuitous statements that the water court made because it was asked to do this thing in the midst of where it simply could have focused on what was being asked for in the application. So would you respond to all of that? I'm sorry, it's so and compounded.
I think the record will show the frustration of the water court, certainly, when there was discussion regarding what exactly, and I think in any change case, there has to be an understanding of what that water right is before you can assess how that change may or may not enlarge that water right. So when you go before the water court to open your water right for a change of use, you open that entire right for consideration. You open for that assessment. And part of that assessment included having to take a look at the 1974 decree to assess what that meant and what that didn't mean.
Can I follow up with that? It seems I'm hearing something different that the two of you are saying. You said when you go in for a change of water right to change the use, but I understood Mr. Grosskopf to be saying their change of water right application did not involve an application for change of use, but only a change in point of diversion. Is that wrong?
No, I'm sorry, I misspoke. That they went in for a change of place of use.
And so who raised the question whether the 74, what the uses were that were approved in the 1974 decree?
Vermilion raised those issues. When the expert was testifying regarding historic consumptive use of the water right, we asked the expert if he had done any analysis on the other uses of that water right, and that expert said he had not, that he had limited his analysis to the irrigation use. And I think it certainly matters because that's a water right that's used for different purposes, as Mr. Raftopoulos is using it currently. He's not solely using it for irrigation. He's using it for other purposes, arguably not under his decree. And why we also think it matters is how the Water Corps considered the use and other beneficial purposes. To allow any use to be included under any other or all other beneficial purposes allows uses to lay dormant, like it did here, for an extraordinary amount of time. And then all of a sudden, a water user then can decide that it has an intent to apply that water. And that changes the regime on the stream. That impacts and injures potentially vested water right users.
And this can I ask one question there? Because something Mr. Grosskopf said right at the end made me sort of curious about this. Can you abandon a use if you are putting the water that you're allowed, that's in your decree, to a beneficial use that's allowed? Have you abandoned anything? If there are multiple uses that are approved, do you have to be using the water for all of them constantly?
I think that you have to, at the very least, make a periodic use in order to maintain that type of use. To have a period of 34 years where you don't use the water for commercial and industrial purposes, and then all of a sudden that use kicks in, that's 100% consumptive use. That changes the stream regime.
And you're arguing basically that if there's a difference in the amounts involved, so you may be enlarging to use one, which seems to me to go back to the question whether it was allowed as a use at all. Can I ask you, just because I'm, just to educate me, can you think of any example where we've held that somebody abandoned a use rather than abandoned a water right?
We think this would be the first case that you did that. Mm-hmm. That there is no case law to suggest that a use can be abandoned. And quickly, with my remaining time, I'd like to address Vermilion's application. And Vermilion's application is actually two separate applications. There's an application for 1,200 acre feet conditional for commercial and industrial uses. And there's a 1,200 acre foot storage in which for agricultural purposes, for which Vermilion was making diligence. So when Raftopoulos talks about water availability, our expert testified that there was a total of 13,784 acre feet, I think is the total amount, far greater than the 1,200 acre feet that any one of those applications would need. And in the Board of County Commissioners of the County of Arapahoe in the United States, this court found that conditional water rights under which no diversions have been made or are being made should not be considered. So when we look under the canon rail and whether there's water available for appropriation, our expert demonstrated that there is more than 1,200.
That's how much, though? You want a 2,500 acre foot reservoir? What is that? What's the upper size?
So with both combined would be 2,400.
So there's two different types of water you're trying to put in the 2,400 acre foot reservoir.
Which
water sources are those then?
The water source is the same for both applications. So there's a 1,200 acre foot storage application for diligence for agricultural purposes. And then another 1,200 same source for commercial purposes.
Conditional.
Both are conditional.
So you need the vessel, the one vessel would handle both?
One or one of four locations.
One of four. Same amount of water though.
No more, not to exceed the 24.
Well, why four? Why didn't you narrow it down to one or two?
And that's what Vermilion is currently doing. In the Inberg-Miller report that Raftopoulos has referenced was a soil evaluation on the Sparks 1A. And Vermilion is simply currently assessing all four of the reservoir locations. One of the reservoir locations actually has a small reservoir constructed on it. So House has already started to store water under a separate absolute and conditional storage rights. For Vermilion's application, in addition to the water available, well, I guess I would like to step back. What Raftopoulos is suggesting in its argument is that an applicant must determine and overcome every and each future contingency. And he's also arguing that they need to demonstrate that they have the money in the bank before submitting an application for a conditional water right. And a conditional water right preserves an applicant's position in Colorado water priority system, so the applicant can take the necessary steps to explore its options. Time and additional study are often necessary to demonstrate whether the construction plans are feasible, whether finances can be made, and whether the project can be successfully completed.
Council, can I just ask you to specifically address the use of the word impossible in that one sentence? I mean, how do you read that? Do you concede that that was a mistake, or do you read it in context somehow, that it doesn't establish an impossibility standard?
And I don't, Vermilion's not supposing that, is not arguing that the measure is that it must be proven impossible. What Vermilion relies upon is the series of case laws, which takes a look at when a conditional water right is defeated. And those cases have to do with things that are fatal, things that such as the city of Aurora wanting to construct on the state land board lands in the city of Aurora partnership case, where the state land board had already given the right of ways to Rangeview.
Is there a right to have a private condemnation for a reservoir site?
Yes, there is.
Where is that case or statute that enables that?
And the private right of condemnation, I believe, and I'm going to cite to Henry Gibbs, which is 856 Pacific 2nd, 798, which says an applicant may rely upon the potential right of private condemnation in satisfying the canon well requirement. And I believe the right for condemnation is found in the Constitution.
I think that includes reservoir rights.
Correct.
Okay.
So if I might turn you back to Justice Ide's question, I understand the way you're construing the case law, but I think that really the thrust of her question was how the trial court articulated that standard. How should we read that?
I think that Vermilion pointed out to the trial court, and the trial court talked about two future contingencies. It said, I don't think that you proved that you could afford to build this reservoir. I don't think it's financially feasible. And the second contingency that the water court pointed out was the soil conditions at one of four locations. And what Vermilion said is that you need to apply this balancing test. And in Thornton v. Bijou, there's much discussion about that the canon will should not be applied rigidly. And that's where we pointed out to the water court that we felt the water court got it wrong. And after consideration, the water court said, you know what, I did get it wrong. And so we don't think he shifted the burden to Raftopoulos. We believe that he had rigidly applied the standard. And he ignored the fact that there were three other reservoir locations that were viable.
Time is up.
I thank both attorneys for their arguments in both cases. Both cases will be submitted on the briefs. We'll take a 15-minute